Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Barling and Barrett on Crime. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'm joined by my very good friend, veteran attorney Manny Barling. Manny, hello.
Hey, how you doing, Simon? And I hope everybody's enjoying a wonderful Memorial Day weekend and taking a moment to pay tribute to our troops who've made so many sacrifices for us, not only now in this political climate, but throughout the last century and 2 world wars and God knows how many skirmishes. So we have a special guest
indeed
today, don't we? Yeah.
We do, and I will let you do the introductions so I don't get into a fight early.
Well, we've asked John Perry, and we did ask Dan McCann to come back and finish our discussion about police and arrests and all these other things. Dan opted for the wine country with his wife, which I imagine was good advice because she probably threatened his life. You're going to talk to the guys on Memorial Day weekend instead of going to the wine country with me? So we've given him a special dispensation to keep his marriage alive. So, John, yeah, you seem to be doing okay with this. This is John Perry, who operates Sunset Protective Services, who protect Malibu Beach and God knows what else, and is probably the top investigator in Southern California. So if you live in Southern California, you got a problem, look up Sunset Protective Services on the Internet. John, welcome.
So thanks for that infomercial, Manny. I just wanted to thank the men and women in uniform of our country today because they know firsthand what the true cost of freedom is. And I'd like to say, don't limit your gratitude and appreciation to them only for this weekend. Carry it through all year. If you see a person in uniform and you're at a restaurant, if you can afford it, pay for their meal and show your appreciation. Also, I'd like to acknowledge the passing of a man today who has enhanced the quality of my life perhaps more than any other. Eugene Pauly, the inventor of the remote control, passed away this week.
Yes, I saw that. And yes, what would we all be without him?
That's right, that and indoor plumbing.
Yeah, well.
Oh, John, I just knew that you would get, you know, some zinger in there.
Didn't even mention you, Simon.
No, I feel honored.
or else you feel safe, one of the two. Which
just started.
I have a question for both of you. Actually, it's more for Manny. Boy, I could just do with a cigarette, but they're so damn expensive. It's the taxes on them.
Well, you can go to Chicago. You can go to Chicago, and you can buy them off the back of a car, a police car at that.
Okay, tell us the story.
Well, you know, today's show, I'm not sure whether it's a comedy or a tragedy. You have to laugh a little bit about what we're talking about because it, at the same time, it's a tragic a list of stories of some of the things going on in police departments around the country. Some expose human nature, some expose greed, and expose other things. But it exposes a long-going problem in the police department that we've been discussing for a while. The need to hire policemen in a very poor economy, the need to fill it with minorities, other people that people who may not have passed tests, not because they're a minority, but because they weren't qualified maybe 20 years ago, and the expanded size of police departments, over 30,000 in New York, 10,000 in Los Angeles, so approximately the same amount in Chicago. And this is what happens. In January this year, a policeman was arrested with $10,000 wrapped in a newspaper from an informant from the U.S. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, a notorious ATF. And it was the informant was posing as a trafficker in contraband cigarettes, those without a tax stamp. And it was approximately 10,000 cigarettes, which is about 500 packs. Well, you know, when I was young, cigarettes were like 25 cents a pack, even though I didn't smoke. It was a no big deal, and now you have to mortgage your car, sell your child for a package of cigarettes, or at least a carton. So anyway, they charged the officer's name is Drouse, and his Lawrence A. Drouse, and his son with a conspiracy to commit extortion. They're released on OR, which is surprising to me, except it's not good to have police necessarily in a jail. And it turned out that he had been extorting money out of this informant for a number of months. And basically, they were going through a situation where the father was providing protection. And at one point, he was recorded as saying that, accepted the package for cash. He says, I'm doing this for my son. I don't care about anything. It's for him. I want him to do good. Having him commit crimes, is that doing good? So at some point, the informant said to him, I'm having trouble. I need you to scare off somebody. So well, give me his name. And then, of course, it was another informant. So what does the dumb cop do? He goes to the informant, and he says to him, hit the road, and threatens him, and he leaves. So if you want to go to Chicago and buy cigarettes cheap, they're no longer for sale. And, John, this highlights an issue that we've talked a lot about and I want to point out that 99% of the police department are hardworking guys who care about everything they do and care about what goes on every day. But there's always a few, the so-called bad apples, that make it difficult for everyone else. And this is a classic situation where one individual has really besmirched the name of the police department in Chicago. And so, John, my question to you is, how much of this is going on? Is it as bad as it sounds?
Well, the example you cite, Manny, I think a lot of people feel that cigarettes are taxed and regulated in a draconian manner, and no one really sees the harm in making a buck on the side. For instance, look at during Prohibition. A lot of cops turn the other way with people, the speakeasies and drinking. It's when you're trying to enforce something that really, in the eyes of the public, isn't harmful, it's difficult to expect people to follow the law or regulations they don't see as just.
John, that's why I selected this story, is because it's not what we call a malum in se crime, where it's something very moral, where, I turn my head when someone is being physically abused, for example. This is a case where this law is primarily passed for health reasons, because the bulk of this money is used, as you know, to supposedly finance cigarette advertising. I know that's been successful in California, but I'm not sure that it's been as successful throughout the country. So it raises to me serious questions exactly in that direction. If you disagree with the morality of a law and you're a policeman, can you really truly ignore it?
Well, what about that Marine from, I believe, Camp Pendleton, who was booted out for some Facebook remarks about Commander-in-Chief Obama?
Well, I think that John can render his thoughts, too, but I think that's a little different. What separates that to me, for me, is that Obama is the Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces, and he is sworn to follow the Commander-in-Chief. So to a great extent, his criticism of Obama is criticizing his superior officer, and in the military, that's grounds for being relieved of duty. Whether or not you agree or disagree with him, he waived his right to have free speech in regard to the President of the United States when he joined the military, and the fact that we then changed to a president that he may or may not like is not sufficient grounds to get out there and start criticizing someone. I know, John, you're not an Obama fan, so perhaps you can give us somewhat of an alternative perspective on this.
Well, from my own experience from the Sheriff's Department, if we weren't able to criticize our supervisors, I don't think I would have lasted a week. Thank God for civil service protection.
Yeah, well, don't you think the military may be a little bit different than that?
Yeah, I'm sure it is, but not being a veteran, I can't really speak to it. Certainly, they're questioned not to challenge authority, and that's what's ingrained in them. Whether good, bad, or indifferent, that's what they're supposed to do.
Okay, maybe I didn't select the very best example to use, but you know, I think it's reflective of the Drauss story, because here is Drauss. He's a police officer, and by him being a police officer, he has certain obligations. You know, number one, to follow the law. But apparently he doesn't like this particular law, doesn't agree with it. So I think the two stories do share something in common.
Well, possibly, but if you'd taken that same military officer at Pendleton, and he was smuggling cigarettes and selling them to other members of the armed forces, his penalty would probably be very similar to what these guys are going to face, too, because that conduct's illegal there also. You just can't get up and... Listen, I disagree with speeding, but I still get tickets if I speed. So, you know, what's to change that application of the law?
Well, indeed. Actually, I had a good friend who was involved in developing stealth technology. This was several years ago. And he came out with this great idea for avoiding speeding tickets. You could go as fast as you wanted, and all that you really needed was a little gizmo in the car that would fool the radar gun into thinking that your vehicle was the size of a large battleship traveling at 500 miles an hour.
So did you get a patent on this?
No. It's actually illegal to do that kind of thing.
Only in some states. Radar detectors are illegal in many states. Did you know that?
Yes, they are indeed illegal, but they're also readily available.
I know. I have a state-of-the-art one, and the difference is I have not had a speeding ticket, knock on wood, in countless years now, and that is the main reason. They really do work. The new ones, you've got to update them periodically, because what they do is they try and change the technology to stop people from doing it. But to me, radar tickets are a source of income. They are primarily designed to raise money. There's an infamous stop on Sunset Boulevard, if you're not aware of it, John, at Mandeville Canyon, and there's two of them by Riviera Country Club on Sunset. And every day for the last 30 years, there's been a cop at Mandeville. He hides a little street just before it turns past Paul Revere Junior High School, and one on either end of that space in Amalfi, which, Simon, is an area that houses Sly Stallone, Vin Scully. I met a famous director the other day, Nicholas Meyer, who lives in the same neighborhood, directed three of the Star Trek films, 7% Solution, etc. Steven Spielberg lives on that hill, for example, Ron Howard and the rest of them. And I don't know if it's a political pull or what, but they make sure everybody slows down there. But the real reason is to raise money. And I want to I say this to transition the story. So you want to comment, then I want to move into another story.
Oh, I know the story that you're going to transition into. But before you do, I don't think that there is anyone that drives in the U.S. that doesn't consider speeding tickets, parking tickets, and other, you know, idiot, and I use that term loosely, idiot, you know, traffic violations as little more than a way to raise money for the city, the county, or whatever.
Oh, yes. And John, as you know, there's been a huge stink in our city and state about these, red light tickets.
Right.
Excuse me.
The cameras.
Yeah, the cameras are, you know, they've stopped him, except, as you know, they've left him in certain areas. In other words, smaller cities have not accepted the inevitable, that what they're doing is creating a huge amount of anger among the average citizens, and they just continue to try and collect money. But, yes, it's a big problem here in California where people are very angry about it. Do you know what a stoplight ticket costs on one of those cameras, John?
I heard around $400.
Yep, that's pretty close. So
you're joking.
Oh, I wish I were.
No, it's excessive, Simon.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's a cottage industry right now. Yeah, it is very disturbing. And, you know, what I find really horrible about it is we're in a society where so many people cannot afford to pay these tickets. They're really unfair to someone. And I've been in court. I was in that court not too long ago. I was in a companion court, and I was bored. And I walked over to the traffic court to see what was going on and sat down and listened to a few cases. And they're just giving out these huge fines. And about 90% of the people there said, "Your Honor, I don't have the money to pay this fine." And the judge would give them, you know, several months to make payments and give them a deadline. Some of them said, "Your Honor, I don't even think I could make that deadline." He said, "Well, come back and see me." So now the courts are burdened with all these people who, and believe me, the courts are, they reduced the courts in Los Angeles by, I believe they closed 43 different courthouses. So here we are at a time in the history where judicial resources are shrinking, and they're passing laws that increase judicial activity. It just doesn't make sense to me. John, how do you feel about that?
Well, my general philosophy, Manny, and this was one reason I never really got along with some supervisors. Life's hard enough, and I didn't want to add to working people's grief. So I didn't write tickets. I just couldn't do it because they are too expensive. But ultimately what pays for the services, those tickets, and I never felt you should balance a city's budget on the backs of its motorists.
I agree with you.
But that's why I would never be upper management.
I could think of a dozen other reasons, John.
Well, thanks, Manny. We'll leave those to another show, I hope.
Well, no, I don't consider them negative at all, but there are other reasons you wouldn't fit in. You might want to make change, and you might want to cause people to do what's right in this country, and I don't always see that among the brass in various police departments. They're more concerned about keeping their jobs and all the other things that you and I know go on.
There was an article earlier this week, and alas, I do not have it at my fingertips, but it involves the texting and driving deal, which I believe is a truly dangerous thing for people to be doing. You know, you can't drive with your elbows while you're thumping away on your BlackBerry. Well, I guess BlackBerry's out of fashion, you know, your iPhone or whatever. As I said, I can't remember where this article originated from, but that they were going to hand out a whopping $25 fine for anyone caught texting and driving. Huh. So $25 for doing something absolutely danger-ridden, you know, as opposed to, you know, $400 for running a red light or speeding, you know. It doesn't make a lick of sense.
Well, let's go a step farther. Wasn't you that called my attention to the case of the girl who was sued for sending the boyfriend a text, and he got into an accident while she was texting him, and someone tried to extend liability to her?
Yes, that case actually has taken a twist. The judge took one look at it and said, "Oh no, you can't go there. It's not the girl's fault for sending the text. You know, she has no idea when and where the message will be received.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, this brings up memories of my first year in law school. The leading case is Palsgraf versus the Long Island Railroad, and Mrs. Palsgraf had a scale fall over on her, and she blamed the railroad and sued them. I mean, this is the kind of first-year law school, you know, mecha, you know, where they just run you around on these cases like, what does this mean? And the upshot of the case was that she was not within the foreseeable zone of danger. In other words, when they put a scale down, nobody intended it to fall on her, certainly not the railroad, and liability couldn't be extended to the railroad. And it created that theory about how do you make people guilty of a crime? They have to be within the foreseeable zone of the danger that you're prescribing. So that's a law that I find interesting, but jurisdictions try to get around it. And that's the crux of the matter, is when you want to raise money, you look for ways to get around the law. Right, John? Then they pass
I think that law, and rightfully so, is probably a progressive one, meaning first offense maybe $25, and then it goes up exponentially, $50, $100, $250.
No,
also,
no,
Simon,
it goes up $25, $50, and maxes out at $75 for each successive offense.
Well, I don't think it should max out, but I also wanted to say, Simon, sources close to the investigation tell me that you can not only text but apply lip gloss simultaneously while driving.
Oh, I've seen stranger things.
Yes. In my youth, I remember someone being arrested for being caught driving, eating watermelon in the car, and driving with his knees. So, in fact, it was such a good idea, I used to do it myself, as a matter of fact. And I didn't even think of that until someone suggested it. But anyway, seriously, there have been and are all these various laws that touch all that. I was going back to the speeding because one of the cases I want to discuss was 16 officers indicted in a New York Police Department misconduct scandal. And, you know, basically, I know, John, you probably heard the story that there's a widespread fabrication in drug busts in Queens. And there was, of course, a lot of police complaints about how they handled the protesters of the Occupy Wall Street. And then there's a controversy in New York about stopping and frisking minorities and allegations of racism, which, of course, John doesn't believe occur. And so what happened was after a three-year investigation, they revealed roughly 800 instances of ticket fixing by several NYPD officers and public employees. And the Bronx District Attorney reportedly has a list of over 500 additional officers accused of ticket fixing. That brings the total to 1,300. That's larger than probably 70% of the police forces in the U.S. So, you know, when you look at it, and it was weird, by the way, is they discovered this not because they were investigating. They were investigating the criminal sale of marijuana from a barbershop owned by an NYPD officer. During the wiretap, they heard about the ticket fixing, which turned out to be a separate issue on their own. So they were including, you know, ticket fixing, grand larceny, which means they're probably getting $100 or more depending on what the threshold is in New York. To do that, tampering with public records, conspiracy, all the usual, misconduct, fraud. And five of them were charged with narcotics corruption and covering up an assault, which were discovered along the way while they're finding the tickets, okay? Then to make it... I got the last one, Simon, okay? At the end of the day, they had this grand jury investigation, and the news of the investigation was leaked to the officers in question, which means they had a leak in the grand jury. So go ahead, jump in.
My question, just for clarification, ticket fixing. I'm assuming that what you mean is, you know, a motorist gets pulled over, and the cop says, I can write you a ticket, or you can give me $100.
No. The type of ticket fixing I'm talking about is more institutionalized, where you get the ticket and you call up your buddy and you say, hey, I got a ticket, man. I need to get rid of this ticket. Can you help me? And he goes, sure, I can help you. Don't worry, I'll get it taken care of. And in some cases, they were paying to have it done. And so at the end of the day, people had a go-to guy, so to speak, so they could basically get their tickets fixed. But they weren't done on the spot at the officer's level. It was done in the office.
Okay, in the office. But they've charged, what, it's 16 officers with this?
So far.
I mean, that has to be a fairly large operation in the office, or it was someone very high up that would just say, hey, Joe, go deal with this.
Well, let me offer you this answer, because I wanted to ask John about this. My last comment was going to be, there was so much support for these officers. Over 60 off-duty police officers showed up with signs in front of the courthouse. NYPD culture, it's a courtesy, not a crime. So this is pretty far-reaching. It's not some isolated couple of people. And so, John, you know, I find that very difficult to believe, that officers would take a chance and show up and espouse those viewpoints. How do you feel about that?
Well, let me cut to the chase. Let's say Simon and I are cops, and he cites a friend of mine, and I know him. And I don't want my friend to have to pay the ticket. And I ask Simon, could you be sick this day and not go to court? And he tells me, no, I'm going to stuff him in the trunk of my car.
So tell me, how do you really feel about this, John? I want to know. What's your real feelings?
Well, Manny, it's like taking a free donut or the whole shop. You know, where are your standards? Where do you draw the line? No one's perfect. We all have our boundaries. And
I agree. You
can't expect perfection from anybody. I mean, why expect it from cops when it's not even expected of politicians or corporate officers or people with real power?
Well, you know, John, as you and I know, there are several people, including the sheriff of Los Angeles, who've been accused of that also, as well as the former sheriff in Orange County, Mike Corona, who's actually serving time in prison right now.
But, Manny, that corruption went far beyond the pale.
No, I agree. But what I'm saying is that it's not just New York. It's an institutionalized issue across our country about the philosophy of tickets. And in many instances, officers, as you point out, aren't really strongly supportive.
They're not. Their heart's not in it. They're just directed to do so. And
right.
What's the big deal about a ticket? It's
right.
Not like you're asking them to squash a felony or anything. This is an infraction. It's not even a misdemeanor.
Okay, but let's go back to how the ticket fixing occurs or occurred. What I'm getting from you, John, is that the basic deal is, you know, John Doe gets a traffic infraction, and rather than pay the fine, he says, yeah, I'll go to court. But because the policeman that handed out the ticket doesn't turn up, it becomes automatically tossed in the round filing cabinet.
And by the way, Simon, a lot of guys don't show up anyway, because let's say it's their day off or they're working a different shift. They don't show up as a matter of course anyway. The only guys who really do are the traffic guys, and they know if they don't show up, they're going to lose 5 to 10 tickets that day.
And the highway patrol.
Yeah, well, they write a lot of tickets, but I have seen them not show up on occasion, too.
So
I mean,
have
they could be on vacation. You never know.
And that is quite common. A lot of people I know plead not guilty to traffic tickets, and show up, and if the police officer's there, they go, oh, well, and they ask for traffic school or whatever. So, yes, that is a very, very common strategy.
Now, Manny, if the police officer doesn't show up, the case is dismissed.
That's the point.
And, yeah, so
but
it's worth it to take the chances,
does,
and there doesn't have to be any conspiracy there. It's just a lot of guys don't show up.
Right, and I agree, and that's very common, and I recommend that for all the time. We have a mutual friend who also buys me a free lunch, so you know who it is. And he recently, it was last year, got a ticket coming back from, I guess it was Mammoth, which is, you know, Simon located, in mm-hmm. the northern part. And anyway, Highway 395 is also notorious for having too many highway patrolling tickets. So he said to me, I got a ticket, I'm just going to pay it. And I sort of laughed. I said, okay, we'll see how you do when the bill comes in. And sure enough, I get a phone call not much later, and he's going, Manny, he said, this is a $500 speeding ticket. And I said, I knew you'd figure that out. So he got so upset, he got up one morning at 5 a.m., rushed out to the infamous, Mojave Court, which is okay to do in the fall, and spring, but you really wouldn't want to be there in the winter, in the summer. And the highway patrolman didn't show up, and he managed to get out of the ticket. And he was so happy, it justified his drive. But to him, it was worth the drive.
Right. Well, Manny, let me give your listeners some practical advice. If you're given a ticket, you have nothing to lose by going to court. As a matter of fact, if you go to court and the officer shows up, the judge will ask, do any of you want to change your plea to guilty and ask for traffic school? Say yes, and a lot of times the judge will reduce your fine by 30% to 50% just by you going.
Yes, that's true.
It doesn't hurt to go anyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what I'm hearing here advice that kind of cuts two ways. You know, we're all concerned that the judicial system is already jammed to the max. And so, you know, even if you're blatantly guilty of some offense, it's always best to plead not guilty. Go to court and go, oops.
Well, it's not oops. Every person's entitled to a defense and to take advantage of those things under the American system of jurisprudence. There are those of us who have sworn an oath to making sure that you have the right to do that, and we try to do it whenever we can. And yet lawyers are criticized for doing what we instinctively are taught to do, which is to counsel people on how to get around some of these laws.
But also, Simon, you got to remember, not everyone is as affluent as you, and the cost of that ticket is going to be more than they make in a day.
Oh, trust me. The idea of being slapped with a $400 or $500 fine makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand up.
Right, if it was $25, people would pay it, but it's not. You can't afford it, a lot of people. So they're going to go and hope the guy doesn't show up and get a reduction from the judge. And I agree with the judge for doing that because they took the time to go, and then they're pleading guilty. They're acknowledging their, mistake. And, you know, they get a little reduction in the fine. I don't see anything wrong with that.
No. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. In fact, I think it's a great idea. But my point is that, you know, day after day, I read stories about how the justice system is so backlogged, you know, blah, blah, blah. Cases take forever to, you know, make it through the court system as a result. If everyone that got a traffic ticket suddenly pled not guilty, wow. I mean, nothing would
Simon,
ever
it's
happen.
The one, it's worse. Like, let's say an illegal alien. You give them a ticket. First of all, you don't even know who they are. They're never going to go to court. It goes to warrant. You'll never find them. And then to talk about backlogging the system, if they get arrested, then they have to go to court for this ticket they never acknowledged. That actually costs a lot more money when people do nothing and don't respond to the summons on the ticket. Then it has to be entered. It goes to warrant. It's a misdemeanor. And it actually costs the public millions of dollars when people don't acknowledge their subpoena for court.
Right.
Instead of being revenue positive, then it turns into revenue negative.
Well, I still think that traffic infractions should be revenue neutral. I'm not saying that, you know, that there shouldn't be fines, but maybe, just maybe, if you were slapped with a smaller fine, you might be less tempted to take it to court and tie up time and money, you know, fighting it.
Well, I have to interject something here. I've listened long enough. There's a basic point. No, really, there's a basic point that gets missed here. Why do I post these so strongly in my own personal life when I could, you know, I don't know that it's, you know, I would enjoy paying a large check. It would not kill me, but it would make me extraordinarily unhappy. But the reality is it increases, you know, car insurance rates. That's the issue, is if you get a speeding ticket, you are, and especially if you own a sports car or whether it's a smaller one, a Miata, or a larger one like a Porsche, your insurance company seizes the opportunity to increase your basic car insurance. So people who get tickets aren't going, gee, I'm worried about the law, whatever. They're going, my goddamn insurance company is going to screw me. And I hear it day in, day out, and John, you do too. And if you get a couple of them, if you're apathetic, say, oh, I'll pay this one, and then you get a place like, oh, how about Kings County on the way up the coast, which is just north of, what do you call it, Paso Robles area? They do not allow you to go to traffic school. So if your second ticket is in their jurisdiction, whoa, if you've got some serious trouble, because that may increase your insurance by as much as $1,000 a year. That's what people are worried about here, at least in California anyway. So that's a big problem, don't you agree, John?
Well, that's an astute observation, Manny, as usual.
All right, so really what you're saying is that there's a food chain here. The city or state, whatever, makes money by collecting the fines, and the insurance company makes money by going, oh, you screwed up. Now we're going to get ya.
Yep, sounds like it to me. And, you know, you also have to understand, this may surprise you, but municipalities actually audit the state on tickets, especially highway patrol tickets, to make sure that the address marked down is truly in or outside of their own city area. And why? Because in some areas, highway patrolmen will look around and kind of guess where they are, and the reality is a certain city may be getting less revenue because they are within their city limits, but there are the tickets attributed to another location. You go, God, that's kind of weird. Well, I'll give you an example. The city of Santa Monica, which we often refer to as the People's Republic of Santa Monica, is balancing its budget and has been for probably 20 years in the backs of parking meters and tickets. I mean, if your parking meter expires, a meter maid drops out of the tree in a parachute, and it's one of those, you know, custom ones, and is writing your ticket before you can get your quarter out of your pocket. It's and the fines there are $25 or $30. In California, if you don't have a front license plate, you can be cited. And in most instances, you're required to go to an inspection within L.A. or whatever city and show them that you have reattached your license plate. But in beautiful downtown Santa Monica, they don't care. All they want is your check, and you can just leave the license plate off until the next time you write them. And guess what? When you go back and they write you again for it, they don't care whether you pay it then either, because all they really want you to do is to write a check for that one too. So conceivably, I've seen people with Ferraris and other cars, because, you know, there's some foreign cars that don't come with front license plates, and I've seen them repeatedly get cited, and they complain. The minute they leave their car in the street in Santa Monica, they get a ticket for no front license plate. And
wow.
one of my friends said to the meter maid, I don't understand this. It's not fair. She said to him, what do you care? Just pay the ticket. We'll take it. So what? You get one every few weeks. What do you care? You got money. That's what she said to him. So, yeah, it's a racket in Santa Monica and in all these small jurisdictions. And a piece of California history, there's a city called Cabazon. You've probably never heard of it. Cabazon's most famous feature right now is it has a Simon Discount Mall, which are, you know, very popular across the country, where women can stop on the way to Palm Springs because it's probably the last little spot on the way to Palm Springs where they can buy clothes and designer clothes, big name clothes. I mean, we're talking about Jones in New York and the type of things that women like to buy that can be purchased at a discount. So when I was a child, Cabazon, there was no freeway. You had to drive through it. And I can remember being very, very young. And I can remember being stopped there once with my mother. And the cop made us drive to the judge's house, which time they opened up the garage, in which he had, would you believe, an entire courtroom in there. And he called court into session and fined my mother. And if she didn't have the money, they were going to put her in the slammer. Oh, you can imagine how my father came unraveled when he heard this story. But it turned out my father wasn't the one to worry about. They had given tickets to wives of people like Harry Cohn, the founder of Columbia Studios, and a number of other distinguished people's wives. And they were really very, very unhappy about it. So they got together and they convinced became Supreme Court Justice.
Burl Warren,
to push through a highway bill. And one of the first highways in Southern California to open was a stretch of 5 miles that circled around the city, so nobody had to drive through it, and so nobody would get a ticket. And over a period of the years that followed, and it wasn't very many, it was just maybe 3 or 4 years, I watched this little city die, because that's all it had going for it was the ability to write checks. Right ticket, excuse me. And that's an example. So it's not new. This has been a theory for a long, long time about small cities. I bet you never heard that one, have you?
No, I haven't. But I want to throw something else into the mix. And it has really nothing to do with our discussion about cops gone bad. But it just bothers me. You get a parking ticket, but there are a number of cities around the country that follow that up with the infamous boot. I'd love to know the pair of your brains. You know, what do you think about someone removing a boot?
I actually have never heard that done. They're so hard to remove. They're built like a tank. Have you ever heard of one being removed, John? I haven't.
No.
Oh, I've seen some videos. It can be done. It's very dependent on the make of vehicle. Particularly the type of tire, but apparently by deflating the tire somewhat.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can slide it off.
I've never seen that. That's kind of interesting. Well, first of all, you know, they're designed for people who have, you know, been evading, you know, parking tickets for an eternity. You know, and it's just, I don't know. You know, it comes to a point, if you're going to have an attitude where you just got to run up literally 1,000 parking tickets because you don't give a shit, then frankly, you deserve to have that happen to you. And that's usually the people that are exposed to that.
I'm not trying to defend the people involved, and you're quite right. You know, you don't find your car booted on the first offence. Usually there's a big file of unpaid fines, but. Yeah, more the idea of where you stand removing it.
Well, I don't know. You know, right now what we're dealing with is classic civil disobedience. I don't know that Whitman really intended this, Walt Whitman, as a form of civil obedience that he had in mind. But the fact is, we are in an age in the United States that may have started with the hippie generation where, you know, objecting to laws you don't agree with has become a very common habit. And in many respects, that's a further step along that way. You know, the whole thing about parking tickets goes to the philosophy of the city. If that particular person is a resident of Santa Monica, I probably support him. You know, I just, living there for as many years as I did, in fact, it's one of the reasons I moved. I became so disgusted with how they handle it, and they turned everything they could within the city into parking structures where they could, of course, earn more money by causing you to pay for more parking. I mean, everything in that city, I mean, they must get up in the middle of the night going, how can I get more parking revenue? How can I get more parking revenue? Because that's what it feels like. And John, you were there the other day. You could see how, you know, how difficult it is. They've narrowed everything down. They've made it very difficult for anyone to park. You're limited in how you park. I mean, it's just a scam to me.
Yeah, I thought I was going to get a ticket because I was stuck in traffic for an hour.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, you didn't move, so they were going to get you, huh?
And are you sure you're not talking about the 405 freeway on a Friday afternoon?
If I take the Santa Monica Boulevard at 4 in the afternoon.
Worse. You know, when I lived there, John, it was 5 minutes to the freeway. When I moved, you know, coming down the hill from where I lived, it would take me sometimes 25 minutes to get the 405 from where I lived. That 2 years before would take me 5 minutes. And I mean, I was literally run out of the West Side by disgust. I just couldn't stand it any longer. And it's even worse now. And log jam in California is made worse because you saw Carmageddon, right, Simon?
Oh, yes.
Well, Carmageddon is that area. That's where they're redoing the freeways. So to add to the additional problems involved, they're closing the freeways. John, they're closing the infamous Wilshire freeway entry at the 405 by Westwood.
No,
they're going to close. They're closing one side at a time over a period of the next year to rebuild that. Oh my God!
Yeah. Okay, we've kind of got off topic, and it was my fault. I started it.
Funny, I noticed that. Didn't you notice
right.
that, Simon? You know, John and Simon did it.
Well, I wanted to answer that question with an analogy. I care as much about the boot removal, Simon, as I do your opinion on any topical issue.
You care that much, huh?
Yeah, okay, John. Today is not your birthday. You are fair game again.
I mean, I warned you, it's the playoffs. You got to up your game.
No, I want to go back to the original topic of the program. Cops Gone Bad, I think, has been used before. But suddenly it seems to be happening a lot. You know, is it... why is it happening? And what else is going on? I have a long list of cases. Many... You have some other favorites. I know that you want to talk about.
Well, it's hard to pick the one you want best, okay? They're the simple ones, like in Nassau County, which is essentially Long Island area. We had a deputy commissioner, a chief of patrol, and a few officers who were basically getting fired. The officers, I think, resigned already because a student named Zachary Parker stole $3,000 in computers in 2009. But Parker's father, Gary, was involved with the Nassau Police Department Foundation, a charitable foundation. So he pressured the chairman and other people not to arrest his son and charge him. And, of course, they didn't. So basically everybody got upset. The newspaper found out about it. They published it. There was a grand jury, and, of course, the kid was indicted for burglary, grand larceny, and criminal possession of stolen property, and a couple of police resigned. And that's sort of a simple one, but the more complex ones, and the ones that I consider really serious, is in West Virginia, a sheriff's deputy was indicted of 12 charges of sex crimes against four girls and one woman who were in custody. And what I found, his name has got to name him because his name's Deputy Bradley C. Taunton of Hillsborough, West Virginia. And that's a pretty horrible crime and one you can't laugh at. And his crimes included oral sex and intercourse. These are things that people who are vulnerable in jails, we don't know whether there are housewives, hookers, young girls arrested for alcohol, you know, underage. It could be anybody, and it's terrible. What I found that it was really funny is they tried to call him at home, and he didn't return their phone call. Gee, what a shock. But these are the type of things we're talking about, John, and to me it shows an overall decline in the quality of applicants to police departments, because I would think that in past years, certainly in Los Angeles, and we'll talk about the LAPD, I could not imagine one of these people being hired during the reign of, say, Chief Parker, who I know you admire a great deal.
I do.
So don't you find this this sort of a general decline issue, or do you find this just sort of an aberration?
No, I think it happens to be spotlighting law enforcement, but it's rampant throughout society, and a lot of people don't see consequences to your actions. For instance, I'm thinking of a senator who went off a bridge. His girlfriend was killed. His license was suspended 3 months, and he was elected to the Senate. What, 7 or 8 more times?
Oh, yeah, I can't count that high.
Oh, let me guess. More people died at Chappaquiddick than Three Mile Island.
That's a good one. John likes that. You know,
Eddie, nepotism and favoritism exists in the world.
Right. And you know something? Thanks to you, I'm going to hear that for the next 5 years.
So, you know, obviously that kind of thing doesn't bother some people. So why hold police to a higher standard?
Well,
I agree with you.
Absolutely have to be held to a higher standard. I mean, these are people that we have... I'm going to use the word elected, but I don't mean it in that term. You know, to... protect us, and if they are not held to the very highest standard, why even have them?
Well, because the other 99.9% of the people out there in the various police departments are busting their ass for you. It's just these few, and the truth is, these guys may be wonderful when they're dealing with some serious matter in terms of. You know, a crime or some other item, but the reality is that they've also chosen to ignore the common issues and maybe place a lesser importance on them. What do you think, John? I mean,
I think good cops have strong personalities, and sometimes it's hard to rein that in. And if you want certain type of protection, you got to attract the right kind of people. And pacifists didn't free the concentration camps. So I think you're always going to have certain people that go off the track, but because of the nature of the job, you need aggressive people to do it.
Now, I must compliment you. You come up with some of the most unusual analogies I
have
ever heard.
Think about it, Manny. You got to have an aggressive, strong personality to go out for crooks.
No, I agree. No. It was your analogy to to the Holocaust that I...
You know what I'm saying? You can't be a pacifist and buy the book every day and, you know, hope people do the right thing, because it's not going to happen.
I agree.
All right. I'll rephrase my question.
But, Simon, can't expect perfection from any group.
No. But do we have a problem in the selection process of and I really don't want to get into a racial discussion, but are the police of today somewhat wrapped up in we've got to have minorities. We've got to recruit from this mix, rather than we're going to recruit who we think are best qualified.
You want to tackle that one, John?
Yeah, certainly that they have to meet certain numbers. I've worked with deputies of every color, creed, religion, and I never saw much difference. The people I worked with, regardless of any of those factors, were very competent, or they were incompetent. I don't think it had anything to do with their background or anything else. It just maybe they didn't have the aptitude for the job. But I think the bigger picture is the culture's changed somewhat. And I've articulated this before. I think money's corrupted a lot of people in a department, as far as in all departments. It used to be, when I started, the pay wasn't that good. People did it because they wanted to do the job, more so than the money and the benefits. Now, because especially with the economy now, the benefits and the pay is so much better than most jobs in the private sector that a lot of people are just coming on the department to punch their ticket, maybe do a year or two on the streets, which is the hardest job you can have on any police department, and then become a bailiff or a bus driver or work in the jails, work a lot of overtime, make a lot of money, and retire without ever really doing any police work, because they don't have a love for it like a lot of people that I came in with did. It just has to do, and the same you could say the teaching profession. Any profession where you're going to be compensated well is going to draw people in for the wrong reason, in my opinion, namely just the money.
Yeah, I agree with you, John. And by the way, I have a slightly different viewpoint of what I've seen in terms of corruption. And I really have found the corruption to be a greater problem among Caucasian members of the force than I do minorities. And these guys are taking bribes for tickets are more commonly found among the wealthier, Caucasian members of our community and not
Boss
among
is
minorities.
Always, remember Rafael Perez.
Rafael Perez is an exception, and he was on my mind because I knew you were going to mention him. So I was going to get around to it. Rafael Perez is famous for the famous scandal in downtown L.A. out of the what's the name, Rampart Division, that started a lot of this, the Los Angeles on the negative chart of being monitored by the federal government. But nevertheless, most of those, what we're talking about, ticket briberies, occur in more places like the Calabasas Courthouse or Chatsworth or Pasadena or other people where white communities are a little closer to the sheriff and or the police department and have more contacts. Traditionally in the minority communities, the relationship with the police isn't good enough for them to be able to share those kind of relationships. But anyway, putting aside, I agree this is an indictment of our entire society and the downturn of what I consider the moral fabric of our country. And John and I talk about this often at lunch, how many people we see with no morality who just literally violate the law at every turn and don't seem to be as concerned about it as the rest of us and seem to have no moral commitment to what they're doing. And it really bothers us because what we have now is a country that has a very low respect for the law. So what do we have? We have an example like the guy in New Jersey, the young student who used the internet to embarrass his roommate who committed suicide. He has shown not only not a bit of remorse, he acts like somehow or another he is the one who is being abused here. And I listened to his mother the other day going about, he's suffered enough. Someone died. What do you mean suffered enough? You can't suffer enough. Not only that, this is a kid who the rest of his life is going to go through looking for a job, and if it doesn't change his attitude, it's not going to be employable. And he may not be employable because of this negative experience. But the bottom line is the general people who are, you see, who've committed crimes, do not apologize for them, have no sense whatsoever that they have violated the law, and in general are evidencing the general decline of our society. And I won't go any farther with my rant. It's time for someone else.
Okay, let's switch gears here for a second. Who wants to talk about Mike Corona?
Oh, Mike Corona. Before we get to Mike Corona, there's one other one we didn't talk about. We were talking about other tickets. Did we mention the guys in Fort Worth and Dallas who basically, and this is a different kind of fraud, John, 10 counts of tampering with a government document with intent to defraud. They basically were billing overtime to a federal program for writing supposedly tickets and things. I mean, I think that's a problem without in our country, period. You know, a lot of people, employees, you know, puff up their expenses and do this or that. But I've never seen anyone caught who's essentially sending false reports to the government, almost like Medicare, and you know the dangers of doing that with Medicare, and here they go. They're doing the same thing with tickets. I mean, isn't that amazing to you, John?
Not at all, Manny. It's a federal program. Are those people any worse than GSA partying in Vegas on the taxpayer's dime?
Oh, that may be poor taste, but one of them is an extreme violation of the law.
They just look at it like it's federal money. Somebody's got to spend it.
Well, that's nice, John, but you're someone who's against Obamacare, for example, and talks about all of the waste and the things that can go with it and how you don't want the government interfering with this or that, and yet the government provides a grant, and you don't see anything really wrong with someone using that grant to essentially...
See, of course it's wrong. I'm talking about the mentality that it's government money, basically free. It's borrowed from China. I want my cut. That's the mentality.
That's hard to argue with that one, isn't it, Simon?
Come on, that's the mentality. Oh, it's funny. Why shouldn't I get a cut?
Yeah.
Look at GSA. That's what more do you need? Just picture the public sector feeding at the trough.
You know, but
this is just another example of people that should be held to higher accountability.
But, Simon, if you had $1 million at your disposal and either you were going to get the money or GSA, let's say, or any other government program, or the money was going to go to Solyndra, Wouldn't you try to spend it?
I'd employ you to guard my house.
See? And that would be a wise investment.
You know, John, I need to point out to you that this disturbed Graham Nash considerably of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. And Graham wrote a very interesting song that's called I've Got Mine, and that's really an indictment of this whole thing. It bothered me so much. We saw it as so all-pervasive among the Americans. And it's an interesting song for anybody who likes rock and roll. And so it goes, I got mine and you got yours. And that's exactly what you're describing, that mentality, right?
Yeah, and look at these people marching because they want their student loans dissolved when they made a contract to pay when they went to school. What about the people who go to work every day and pay for their school?
Well, first of all, what should happen is they first should intervene with the schools and make them give them a credit for what they're doing, because right now you can talk about the condition of the loans in terms of what everyone's complaining about is they're too easy. We've got this huge bubble. We're up to this $1 trillion, and it's really the dishonesty of the schools. Right now, schools charge tuition in direct proportionate to what the government will give in terms of grants. And when the government grants go up, their demand for tuition goes up proportionally with them. It's really a disgusting element of our society right now.
The difference between that and the guys who falsified the overtime on the tickets, what's the difference?
I think they're all bad, personally.
Okay.
Well, okay. I don't care what students do, but I do think that a police officer is held in higher respect, shall we say, than the folks that appeared in what's that great movie? Can't remember now. You know, the
we'll
stupid,
catch up with you.
Stupid college movie.
Okay, you're talking about Animal House?
Animal House.
Hey, that was my freshman year in college, so be nice.
Right.
I lived in a house that looked just like that.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
And I survived.
Right. But, I mean, let's face it. A police officer is someone that should garner respect. You know, if they ask you questions, you're polite to them. Or at least you should be. And, you know, the questions they ask should be pertinent. What I'm seeing, though, is an absolute disrespect of society, both by certain police officers and I am by society in some ways. You know, we're doing something wrong.
Oh,
okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've finished my little rant.
But, you know, this has been going on for a while, and it may have started in my generation in the 60s. We were so upset with the way the police and a variety of other people in this country handled issues, including, for example, the simple bit of what they did to people who were protesting in the 60s and the way the police treated them. And guess what? Those people are now your age and my age in the United States, and they have not changed their feelings, although they now have shorter hair and go to legitimate jobs. Down deep, they remember those days, and yes, they do hold them against the police. And I think that's a problem that's showing up now, is all the previous mistakes of the prior, you know, the generations before are coming back, the mistakes of the father, to use an expression, are coming back to haunt the police department now.
All right. Once again, we've kind of you know, fallen off the rails. Two names, Mike Corona and Sheriff Backer. What the hell is going on?
Well, that is a really good question. When you take a look at Mike Corona, which, and he comes up, was the sheriff of Orange County. His appeal to overturn his criminal conviction was just turned down this week by the police, and it just prompted me to go back to it. Here's the sheriff of Orange County, 5 million people in that county, and in the last year or so of his reign, and it was a reign because he was almost like a king, he had two deputies fired after a probe of report of a cat being stunned by a taser gun, which he tried to hush up because he was embarrassed by it. He was caught in the jail offering a bribe to a witness while he was pending trial. They actually played the conversations with the jury. Okay? In the meantime, when he was running for office, he had all of his rivals' emails deleted because he was a member of the sheriff's department. He was an undersheriff to get an unfair advantage. So, you know, and then he had a friend who was a lawyer who pled guilty to bribing bail bondsmen because he had started a deal where the best arrestees were referred to this guy and would give him an edge on basically getting business from the jail. I mean, these things are really kind of startling to me in their own way. And, John, I don't know how you feel about those, but, I mean, this kind of conduct from a guy who's in charge of a department, you know, goes to the issue of absolute power corrupts. But at the same time, you would think in a society dominated by media right now that he would realize sooner or later he'd get caught. And that's what astounds me. Do you have any real feelings about that? And I don't mean so much him in general, but the topic, or specifically, but the topic in general.
I think you're actually being generous citing his crimes, but...
Well, yeah, my
general belief is that he became blinded by ambition. He from all accounts, he had higher political ambitions, and instead of viewing himself as the chief law enforcement officer of the county, he started seeing himself as maybe gubernatorial candidate and building an empire.
Well, I think that almost every sheriff and every DA fundamentally comes from that position. They wouldn't run for office.
Basically, he thought he outgrew the position, and he was on to bigger and better things and totally lost focus.
Yeah, I agree. That's common.
Sacrificed all his principles because I had heard for years he was a good guy.
I had, too.
So, obviously, the reins of power... He became corrupted. And who can say in that position where you're going to be offered all the finest things in the world, it's difficult to say what you would do.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, I look at you, John. You know, off air,
as painful
pointed
as that
out
is,
that
Simon.
You pointed out that you have a summer gig. And, the new Baywatch episodes won't be airing till the fall. Mm-hmm. But, don't you think it would be easy to become corrupted by watching all those young babes on the beach?
I'm a little older and wiser now, Simon, perhaps in my youth. But, that comes with maturity. Sure, for a kid in his 20s, absolutely. But when you get to be my age, you'd rather have a beer and watch the ball game.
I don't know, John. There's something about old men and young women. I'm sorry about that. I must speak for those of us who have not died but are older than you, still look at young women and go, oh, I wish I were younger. And I can speak for every man listening to this show that every man looks at younger women and goes, I hate being old.
Not at all, Manny. I look at it like I can barely afford the woman I have now.
And John, I was just joking.
Why?
Okay. How about the Sheriff Backer debacle?
Well, we're not sure what that is. Someone's got to sit down and investigate him. I'm bothered. I happen to like Sheriff Baca, by and large, and although I know there are a great many members of his department that don't, he's sort of split down different lines. But the fact is that he's been caught giving preference to a variety of friends in different ways that would be normally considered inappropriate. And at some point, that sort of style of favoritism, which hopefully has gone out of style in our country, is not going to be continue. And yet, no one, the county board of supervisors, nobody, has found fit to take any kind of action whatsoever to find out what's true, what isn't true, whether he's actually violated any laws, and whether he's done some proper. And that bothers me, too.
Let me get the story straight. This has not reached a law enforcement arena yet. It's more the LA County supervisors just dodging the ball. Do I have that right?
It's embryonic phases. I think in light of a lot of other issues, for instance, at the same time we have a problem with the L.A. County Assessor's Office, who conveniently does not increase assessments for wealthy people on the west side of L.A. while increasing everyone else's, or basically, in fact, one was indicted this week, and there are going to be other indictments. And I think they're focused on that, but I think it's just a question of time for the deal with Baca's issues, because apparently he's accepted more gifts than every other sheriff in the state of California combined. And then he launched a criminal investigation on behalf of one donor that, he just basically has done a lot of things that shows some type of, favoritism. There have been allegations that he favored Mel Gibson, for example. And then there were the allegations about, what's her name, Gibson was her name? John, the lady who was left the sheriff's department in Lost Hills in your neighborhood and was found a year later, found dead in the mountains in Los Angeles.
Richardson.
Oh, Richardson, right. And there's some issues that some people believe possibly a policeman's responsible, and they've doubted how much Baca wants to search for that individual. So it's a difficult thing. And I know this is not an easy topic for John, who has relationships within the department, and find some of these very, very troubling among his old friends there. So it has been a problem. Nobody knows quite what to do with it, and I think the supervisors are really debating what their choices are right now. And John, I know this is a difficult subject for you, so if you have any thoughts on it, and I don't mean it specifically to him. I mean, in general, this is back to too many gifts, too much favoritism, all the things that you just described that go with a politically ambitious sheriff, and that's the issue, isn't it?
Well, Manny, I'll say police officers are the finest people I know. I'm a little biased, as a lot of my friends are. I think the higher you rise in the ranks, the harder it is to keep your principles in any job.
Uh-huh.
And I think no matter who's sheriff, they're going to encounter a certain amount of problems. Now, how they direct the people under them to handle it, that's probably where the greatest concerns arise.
Yeah, John, don't get me wrong. I didn't bring the subject up to put you on the hot seat.
Well, you kind of are, Simon. I mean, I'm retired from L.A. County, so I have a lot of loyalty to them to this day.
Well, listen, John, I don't have to tell you that I have a great many friends who are law enforcement, including you. And,
right. You
know, my oldest and closest friend's a retired sheriff also. But it still bothers me. And again, I like Baca a great deal. And I'm a strong supporter of the department, as you know. But I still think that he has to answer, and I don't care what his name is. I don't care if it's Baca, Smith, Jones, or whatever, but I just think that we have a problem in our government with too many people collecting too much in donations and other things that cause favoritism, and it's now starting to show up in Los Angeles, and the bigger picture is that we all have to sit down and decide what we want to do about paying sheriffs, paying policemen, you know, how much they're paid, what rules we're going to enforce, whether passing more rules that can't be enforced is of any benefit. Because you take a look at what's going on in Syria. A large number of Syrian forces have defected because they don't want to shoot at their own citizens. And so there's always this sort of dilemma that's floating around in the real world, and that's sort of where we are with this, is what do you do? I mean, you support the sheriff. I like Baca, but can I close my eyes to the fact that things are going on that maybe not be in the best interest of our city? That's the issue to me.
Well, Manny, look at the alternative. Remember, former police chief Willie Williams was getting free rooms in Vegas on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, and he's no longer the chief of police, sir, is he?
Well, I'm just saying, you can't expect perfection out of anybody.
Yeah, and by the way, I don't, in knowing Vegas, I mean, what's he going to get for that? I mean, that to me is a, who cares? I mean, is there some benefit to that? Do they think he's suddenly going to not arrest people or do something? I don't really see what they view as a major crime about accepting free rooms. I get them all the time. I mean, the people in Vegas give out free rooms and the hope that you're going to gamble like they do M&Ms.
Well, it makes it seem like your integrity is compromised, which I think it is.
Well, yeah, there's an aspect to that. But I also don't see anything wrong with free rooms in Vegas. You know, I do see things wrong with fixing traffic tickets. I see things wrong with, you know, dealing you know, cheap cigarettes out the trunk of your car. It's a different world.
Well, they're just trying to compete with the Indian casinos. They don't design cigarettes.
John, I agree with you entirely, but I go back to what I said earlier. The police are held to a higher standard. Indeed, politicians used to be held to a higher standard, but of course that's gone by the wayside.
When was that, Simon?
I don't even think they were held to a high standard in the Roman Empire.
Right.
Was that when Lord Salisbury was the PM?
John, you're probably right there.
By the way, I admire him. Most people don't know who he is.
And that includes grips, too. Oh, gosh. But it is a problem. You know, what we have is a time when everybody was looking for some kind of democracy and more perfect society and all these things. And instead, what we have is just a bunch of clowns repeating history, looking for as much money as they can take, and doing things that are just most people considered basically immoral and honest. Or, to put it a different way, they're doing things the average American can't do and get away with. That's the real issue.
Right. And something has to change, but I don't know what.
Well, if you get a law and order person and they're like William H. Parker, people like Manny complain about him.
Oh, I just complain about
him. Beyond above reproach as far as his integrity.
He was also a Nazi, for God's sakes, John.
See what I mean? You can't win.
Well, you weren't old enough to have been subjected to his tyranny.
I watched Dragnet.
Yeah, well, nobody in Dragnet suffered any tyranny.
I say bring back Hoover.
I liked Hoover. I like my director who can wear a dress. I mean, for goodness sake. He looked great in chiffon. I mean, you know, let's be fair here.
Hey, that's scurrilous invective.
Oh, what's wrong with a good scurrilous invective once in a while?
Okay.
I think we've ruined it.
Here is the big question of the day. And it's a question I've asked myself about other subjects, crime-related. Are we heading into a worse period, you know, where we're going to see more and more abuse of the police or abuse by the police?
Well, Simon, let me ask you real quick. When you ask yourself this question, do you classify that as an intelligent conversation?
Yes, and actually I do.
Okay.
The reason I do is we live in such a wired world. I can get news about anything right here on my computer screens. It doesn't matter where it's from, but it's instantaneous or relatively instantaneous. So I know what happens in Vegas. I know what happens in Japan. That was not the case 30 years ago, 40 years ago. You know, your news came from the newspaper. That's going away. In fact, the New Orleans Times-Picayune has announced that they're going to go to a only 3-day-a-week publication, Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays. And we live in a changing world. My question is, are things worse today? Instances of police abuse of authority any worse today than they were, say, 30, 40, 50 years ago? Or is it just that it's more noticeable because of the fact that we live in this wired world?
Well, first of all, it's very hard to file any claim of abuse against a police officer many, many years ago. So that's a whole other topic, is that you were discouraged to, or there were consequences, especially if you lived in a smaller town where they could identify you, frankly. And so that's an issue, too, is there are more reports, partly because what we have now is a situation where more people are willing to make reports. So that increases, but is it different? Yeah, we have substantially more complaints against police than we've ever had. But let's say that is exponentially related to the increase in dangers of being a policeman and all that entails. If a policeman had a difficult job years ago, now the job borders on the impossible. John, do you disagree?
No, I'm not really sure, Manny. I give the guys a lot more credit for being able to adapt. But, Simon, you might not have been in this country, but just think, we don't have any Bull Connors around anymore.
Well, I don't know. Have you been in the Deep South lately?
No, but I believe it would be on some cell phone if we did.
How about Arizona? You don't think Joe Arpaio borders on that at times?
Not at all. He's trying to enforce the law.
Oh, I see.
Arpaio, there's an interesting subject. Okay, we're just about out of time, so I think it's time for us to wrap it up and go round the table. John, I'd like your parting thoughts of wisdom.
Well, I'd like to again thank our service members on Memorial Day, and I'm reminded of during the Vietnam, there was they called them the Jolly Greens. They were helicopter rescue crews who went in to extract downed pilots and reconnaissance troops. And on their patch on their shoulder, their motto was that others may live. And I think you can contrast that with the occupied people today, whose motto is that others may give.
Mm.
Are you talking about Occupy Wall Street people and trying, a great many of those people out there were veterans of Vietnam.
I'm talking about the people out there who have sacrificed little or nothing and asking other people who have sacrificed and given much to do more.
And I'm commenting to you that a great number of the people who you're criticizing fought in Vietnam and fought for this right and are extremely unhappy with the status of our government and out there exercising their right to petition. And so while you lambast this particular group, I oftentimes disagree with, remember that it does include veterans of Vietnam.
I know. I'm just thinking of one of my fellow officers in Chicago was stabbed with one of the protests, and just thinking of him.
Yeah, well,
John, I never thought I would say this, but I'm in total agreement with you.
Well, Simon, obviously an informed opinion.
It won't last.
Yeah, you know, and I have a couple of thoughts on it, too. And in many respects, I do agree with you, John. And the most important thing for us to remember on Memorial Day is there are more than one ways to fight for your country. There are more than one ways to make contributions to your country. You can help it by help by wounded warriors and do a million other things that are extremely important to our society right now, helping young soldiers rehabilitate. For our listeners who are also employers, I urge you to offer them jobs. Give them opportunities that haven't been available to them. And we need to make them the highest priority in our lives. And on this Memorial Day, I just hope all of them understand that it's not like my youth in Vietnam where people looked upon the military as if they'd done something wrong. And you haven't. You've done something very right, and we support you 100%.
And buy them dinner if you get a chance.
Yeah, and, you know, in regard to our topics today, we can come back here a month from now, and I venture that this will still be a problem a month from now. And our country needs to sit down and take a look at the basic concepts of morality being taught in our basic school systems and deal with it. While I don't agree with the fundamentalist Christians on some of their extreme viewpoints, I certainly agree with them that the problem in our country right now stems from poor education, a lack of moral compass, and it's important for us to change that and to change it in a hurry while we still have a country that's worth saving. And with that thought, I wish everybody a very happy Memorial Day weekend.
I want to thank both of you for joining me today. It's been a wonderful discussion, heated, interesting, provocative, evocative, and I'm sure we'll be back again. Till next time, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, safe, and healthy Memorial Day long weekend, and we will talk again soon. Till then, goodbye.